Hello and welcome all Sense of Life Objectivists to Solo Pilot Podcast number 2. We are the podcast explicitly dedicated to the productive use of objectivism, the philosophy of Ayn Rand. On the show today, we explore the thoughts of a man barely out of the medieval ages and the author of the greatest philosophical suck-up jobs of all time.
And if you think we're talking about Lindsay Perigo, well, you might think that, but I couldn't possibly comment. Yes, welcome again, soloists, to the continuing mission to podcast objectivism. Things are going well. Nobody complained very much in public about the poor audio quality of the previous show, and we're far from short of ideas for more shows. So, if conditions continue to improve, we may soon be able to drop the word pilot from the name of this podcast. Today on the show, we re-release another of solo founder and principal Lindsay Perigo's old politically incorrect show editorials. This time, it's Winston Peters, New Zealand's consummate politician. By politician, I'm referring to the worst sense of the word. I do not mean statesman nor leader. A better term might be political staff. But the distinction between politician and politician will become crystal clear with particular attention to New Zealand's Foreign Affairs Minister, Mr. Peters, when we get to Lindsay's segment. Firstly, however, I'm joined by Duncan Bain, who has lately been reading of a philosopher who ties in nicely with Winston's work, Niccolai Machiavelli. But before we do, I'm going to take us back to Renaissance Florence. It is the early 16th century. The place is Florence, Italy, and something's going on. Part of it is that the printed word is now new on the scene. Part of it are Michelangelo, Raphael, and Leonardo da Vinci. The name for these days is the Italian Renaissance. For most Italians, life is going on much as it did in the past age. Millions live in extreme poverty and remain medieval. But our concern is elsewhere, in the city, where Florence has returned to the world a leisure class. Bankers and wool merchants have created great wealth in Italian city-states. Western man is living once again for the first time since Alexander the Great put an end to them in the type of political unit the great ancients wrote about. The questions of politics that we know, and Aristotle and Plato knew, including the question of liberty, was made relevant anew. These Florentines were involved in a cultural rebirth, and they knew it. The ongoing rediscovery of ancient virtues, skills, knowledge, and culture brought the Florentines more pleasure and civilization with every newly unearthed manuscript. Nominal ruler Cosimo de' Medici brought the Library of San Marco, expressly for the work of unpacking and studying ancient works. This library was like the Cavendish laboratory of our times, from which the science of nuclear power was discovered. Likewise, in this workshop, each new discovery could alter the course of history with an explosion, not of matter, but of mind. And they did. Great art, as everyone knows, came out of Renaissance Florence. An historian of the times claimed that the secret of his city's great art was the Florentine spirit of criticism, which was the spirit of freedom. They were not content with mediocrity, and criticism and competition between artists and craftsmen was harsh and unrestricted, and everyone was in on it. No Florentine would fake a pretense at understanding, nor be silent so as not to seem stupid. They would laugh at us because we do so. They were tough. They had to be, because they were not only curious and intelligent, but downright honest. This honesty, while working well in the service of other spheres, did not serve nor feature in the Florentine advancement of politics. The political situation of the times was very nasty, and nobody was shocked by the corruption, treacheries, and tyrannies by which offices were acquired and held. The people knew all about these political dishonesties, and it made them cynical.
This Florentine characteristic of honesty existed also in the supreme philosopher produced by the Renaissance, Niccolò Machiavelli. Indeed, the modern reader is shocked because he is so honest about dishonesty. Machiavelli, as a minor statesman, had always opposed the Medici family. So, with their return to power, he fell out of favour, was arrested, acquitted, and left to retire to authorship. His book, The Prince, our primary interest here, is famous as the classic work of unfettered, unscrupulous means by which politicians everywhere can win friends and influence people. It is also the greatest philosophical suck-up job of all time. It was dedicated, by design, in vain as it turns out, to win the favour of the ruler, Lorenzo II. Because of this agenda, we are at risk of misunderstanding Machiavelli if we do not contrast this book with his other, The Discourses. But The Prince is all about power, how to get it, how to keep it. This was the only kind of political philosophy possible for the times. Machiavelli was concerned in this work to discover from history and current events how principalities were won and lost. Having selected one's goals, according to the book, one requires a scientific method that will work. This science of success, we may learn equally well from a successful sinner or saint and employ it, then, in the service of either. It just happens that there are more examples of successful sinners. Machiavelli, note, did not synthesize the admiration for means with the admiration of ends, as objectivists do. If the end was good, then it justified any method. Machiavelli would blame rulers for wrecking the world, while simultaneously praising the artfulness of their statecraft performance in doing so. Unfortunately, this view remains all too modern. Little wonder politicians today continue to apply the lessons of the prince, such as these. But it is necessary to be able to disguise this character well, and to be a great feigner and dissembler. And men are so simple and ready to obey present necessities that one who deceives will always find those who allow themselves to be deceived. Hence, it is to be remarked that, in seizing a state, the usurper ought to examine closely into all those injuries which it is necessary for him to inflict, and to do them all at one stroke so as not to have to repeat them daily. And thus, by not unsettling men, he will be able to reassure them, and win them to himself by benefits. He who does otherwise, either from timidity or evil advice, is always compelled to keep the knife in his hand. Neither can he rely on his subjects, nor can they attach themselves to him, owing to their continued and repeated wrongs. For injuries ought to be done all at one time, so that, being tasted less, they offend less. Benefits ought to be given little by little, so that the flavour of them may last longer. If two of your powerful neighbours come to blows, they are of such a character that, if one of them conquers, you have either to fear him or not. In either case, it will always be more advantageous for you to declare yourself and to make war strenuously, because, in the first case, if you do not declare yourself, you will invariably fall prey to the conqueror, to the pleasure and satisfaction of him who has been conquered, and you will have no reasons to offer, nor anything to protect or to shelter you. Because he who conquers does not want doubtful friends who will not aid him in the time of trial, and he who loses will not harbour you because you did not willingly, sword in hand, court his fate. Hatred is acquired as much by good works as by bad ones. Therefore, a prince wishing to keep his state is very often forced to do evil. Sadly, Machiavelli's influence is still strong in modern politics. The following is an excerpt from an op-ed piece by Harvey Mansfield in the Wall Street Journal, arguing in favour of granting President George W. Bush extra-legal powers. The best source of energy turns out to be the same as the best source of reason, one man. One man, or, to use Machiavelli's expression, uno solo, will be the greatest source of energy if he regards it as necessary to maintaining his own rule.
Thank you, Duncan. Before the show ends, I'll have something to say against the Machiavellian school of politics. But before we do that, here's this show's politically incorrect show editorial, which is a case study in the subject.
Good afternoon, kia ora. Welcome to the Politically Incorrect Show on the Free Speech Network Radio Pacific for Tuesday, September 28th. Proudly sponsored by Tuariki Tobacco Limited, the show that says bugger the politicians and bureaucrats and all the other bossy boot busybodies who try to run our lives with our money. It stands tall for free enterprise, achievement, profit and excellence against the state worshippers in our midst. It stands above all for the most sacred thing in the universe, the liberty of the human individual. So, New Zealand first, won hands down in my poll yesterday. The victory was Winston's, of course. Without him, the party would be nothing. And the fluffheads who voted for him hadn't a clue why, other than preposterous illusions about honesty. This is the man who pretended to have met Ronald Reagan when he hadn't,
who insisted that a Cook Strait ferry had scraped the bottom of the harbour when it hadn't, who talked about sickly white liberal guilt when opposing the Waitangi gravy train before jumping aboard it, who talked about small government and low taxes when he entered Parliament before becoming one of the biggest socialists in the business, who turned fudging into an art form and for whom the purpose of politics is simply to play the game successfully and keep grabbing the headlines, whatever it takes. And there's no question that Winston is supremely skilled at playing the game. My frustration is that he's wasting himself. Potentially he's so much better than what he's chosen to become, a demagogue pandering to mindless malcontents. His own pragmatism ought to tell him that the ageing drones who support him now will nearly all be dead in 5 years. But more than that, does he not ever wonder what he has done to his own soul? Winston is sharp, far sharper than most of his colleagues in Parliament. Winston understands principles far better than any of his colleagues in Parliament, with two possible exceptions. Note here, I'm talking about understanding principles, not necessarily advocating or upholding them. What I mean is that he has a capacity to understand abstractions way beyond that of his colleagues and light years beyond that of his senile supporters. Winston has class, and I'm not talking about his double-breasted suits or anything so trivial. Winston could dress in faded jeans and a torn T-shirt and still exude pizzazz. He simply has it. Next to him, his colleagues are yawning bores. In fact, they're yawning bores, whether next to him or not. Above all, and most endearingly, Winston has a sense of life that his anally retentive colleagues in these politically correct times would not begin to understand, and which they actively try to persecute. Winston enjoys a cigarette or two, 100. He appreciates good wine and lively conversation. How he could ever have put up with priggish prudes like Delamere in his caucus is beyond me. Winston can sing Elvis ballads with a sensitivity not too far from the original. The man is glad to be alive, and so I say he is wasting himself, pitching his wares to a gaggle of gaga groupies. It exasperates me to think of the good he could achieve if only he used his attributes in a worthy cause, like rolling back the tide of statism that is engulfing us, as he well understands. Watching Winston is akin to watching Laurence Olivier in a porn movie. This editorial will be posted on my website later today, www.freeradical.co.nz. If you'd like a fax of it, fax us here on 09378 1109. Politically Incorrect Show, desperately seeking the best in Winston, 309-3099.
Thank you, Lindsay. It would be interesting to weigh Winston's soul on the balance these days and see if he still warrants the hope invested by Lindsay in 2001. And now I want to end this podcast with a refutation of Machiavellian politics. In objectivism, we understand that governments are instituted to defend individual rights. People are not put on this earth to make principalities of one another, nor princes of an elite few. Government that does less or more than guard our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is not worthy of the name, but rather should be called a den of thieves, albeit a legalized one. Because moral law alone is insufficient to govern us, we need the law. We have to know this and believe it and fight for it. As much common sense as this may seem, it is under threat in the world, as usual. One of the battlefronts in the solo culture war for Western civilization is the political philosophic one, within which Machiavellian artillery remains a powerful adversary. Machiavelli himself remarked that to found a new state, one would be better off doing it with mountaineers, as the men of the city are so corrupted. The problem for Machiavelli's Florence is the same facing freedom lovers today. It is no longer a doctrine of rights and a philosophy of politics, nor even libertarian policy. We have, with much thanks to Ayn Rand, got that well covered. The problem is cynicism. Politicians are kept in check by a virtuous population. They will behave worse where the people have learned to be cynical of their politicians. Cynicism isn't cool. We must never get used to being treated badly, nor become accepting of politicians who seek to farm us. However, our modern world has taken heed of Machiavelli and used his book so that the state is more powerful than ever before. Thus, we who wish to refute the prince must also be deeper and more perceptive and vigilant than those that came before us. That's one job for Solo, and here's another one, selling t-shirts.
Thank you, Rick. Once again, I want to make a quick mention of the Solo store, which can be accessed by going to the www.solopassion.com website and clicking the link at the top of the page, which says Solo Store. We have a nice selection of items, including our Infidel Gear t-shirts at our Cafe Press store, which allow the wearer to speak out against Islamic fundamentalism and look stylish at the same time. We also have a wide variety of objectivist-oriented books at our Amazon store, including excellent selections like George Reisman's Capitalism. All proceeds from Solo store purchases go directly toward improving site content on Solo, and we would appreciate it if you would take a look and see if any of the items appeal to you. Now we will go back to Rick Giles, who will put the finishing touches on this second edition of the Solo Pilot Podcast.
Thank you, Jason. And that brings us to the end of another Solo Pilot Podcast.
Next time on Solo Pilot.
Next week on the show, we bring you the anticipated interview between the interviewer, young Lindsay Perigo, and the seasoned objectivist, William Waddell. This is the interview that basically dragged Lindsay Perigo, kicking and screaming, bit by bit, into the world of objectivism. So, that's something to look forward to very shortly. And I won't keep you waiting. With thanks to Scott, Lindsay, Radio Pacific, Julian, Duncan, Jason and Jennifer. Opening music, the Tchaikovsky Concerto for Piano and Orchestra No. 1. Martha Argerich, piano, and Claudio Albardo, conducting the Berlin Philharmonic. Solo Pilot, a podcasting production for Solo, Melbourne, Australia, 2007. Special thanks this edition to Shire Network News Studios, Melbourne, where this podcast was produced on this occasion. This will go toward accounting for the excellent microphone quality of the podcast up until now, and also to the contrast that it's going to have with next week in future editions. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. See you next time.